Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Talebi. A bit of a delayed start to the show this year, but we are very back to be tackling your stock-related questions. And with me on the line this evening are independent analyst Ashraf Mohammed and Mark Dutoy from Oystercatch Investments. If you'd like to send questions to us, which we shall pick up as we are pre-recording the show for the moment, please do SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch, and we'll pick them up in the course of the afternoon. We have questions, though, for this evening. But before I get to those, Mark, Ashraf, good to see you both there this afternoon. Ashraf, if I may start with you, not a bad day for the JSE today. And it's quite interesting to me that the Chinese GDP numbers that came out earlier, which weren't especially good and definite slowdown, didn't seem to have too much impact on the major mining stocks in the JSE. Are you surprised at that too?
Julieta, you know, it's a bit of a double-edged sword because, yes, the GDP annual number was slightly below expectations, but the number for the fourth quarter was slightly ahead of expectations. And so there is a view that the momentum is starting to pick up within the Chinese economy, and you'll actually see a slowdown in momentum for the Western economy. So we're talking the US and Europe. And the other thing which is interesting about China, which hasn't been the focus for a lot of investors, is the slowdown in inflation as well. Mm. So whereas in the US you've got rising inflation, and on Friday the print was for 7% annual inflation. In China that number is below 4%.
Yeah.
So you've got the world's two largest economies diverging in many respects. And I think the momentum is starting to pick up in China again. You saw the iron ore price up 17% over the past month. And that's helped to lift the price of your various miners.
Mark, having said all that, Ashraf, thanks, and that is indeed seems to be supporting the market. There may be an alternative skeptical view, which I think I'm leaning towards now, and that is that if China's cutting interest rates, it's trying to support its economy, which seems a little bit interesting considering the amount of leverage in the Chinese system. And if you look at Evergrande, if you look at Chinese banks, and I've been reading a fascinating book over the holidays, it's called The End of Money, about just how much debt there is in China. And I wonder if I would actually be putting any money towards the Chinese markets, even though superficially it looks as if maybe there's an upturn in its economic growth at the moment. Mark, how do you feel about the prospects for the Chinese economy and how it might play out on the markets this year?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we are at a very interesting point where, like Ashraf said, there's a very divergent business or case at the moment where Chinese are basically cutting rates and keeping, pushing a bit of money into the economy to stimulate growth at the same time, whereas the U.S. is raising rates and trying to pull back inflation. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out over the coming year. I do think it sort of means that your Chinese stocks might benefit from the kind of flow-related move as money moves out of the more expensive U.S. tech kind of space and looks for a home elsewhere in the world. The other thing to say about China and the economy is that they're working hard to try and move away from this property-driven type of growth that they've had over the last 30 years into what they call a more consumer-driven growth trend. And, I mean, that is going to be – it's difficult to manage, and there will be bumps along the way, but there's a far more sustainable economy if they can get that right.
Yeah, and perhaps it's a big if, actually, a bigger if maybe than we consider. Getting on to questions, because those have come through – there are a couple of questions. You talk about construction locally, and we've seen the resurgence of some sort of construction-related stocks. Last year, it was an unbelievable year for people, for companies like PPC or Avenge. So the question is, please could the panel comment on prospects of building and infrastructure stocks like WBHO, Avenge, and Robex? Ashraf, would you be adding any of these to your portfolio? They've had a slightly divergent performance, all three, actually.
Yeah. So Robex has been the best performing of the lot, and that was evident in their results towards the end of last year when they showed that their book had actually grown. South African infrastructure spend is fairly limited right now, just given government's challenges with trying to not allow the budget deficit to balloon. So in South Africa, it's fairly limited. The private sector is not investing sufficiently for companies like Avenge, even Murray and Roberts and WBHO to grow and recover. So it's really their offshore books. And on that basis, if you want to play it, I'd go with the WBHO.
Okay.
Avenge is a recovery play.
Yeah.
But you are taking significant risk with Avenge. So I don't really see much potential in terms of construction stocks. I see it elsewhere in the market.
Okay. Mark, do you have a similar view or a differing one?
Yeah, I mean, we agree. Like, I guess the kind of infrastructure spend which has been spoken about is it's very slow to kind of come to the fore. I mean, the only real bright spots we're seeing is in the renewable energy space. I mean, that potentially, you know, could be a fair amount of infrastructure spend. But yeah, I think that the construction stocks kind of ran ahead of what the spend is going to be that comes through. So we're not that excited about the construction space.
Yeah, I mean, I do get the sense that there was a lot of relief in the kind of results that Aerobix came out with or that Avenge. But I mean, both share prices had a phenomenal year, so maybe it's time for them to steady out a bit. There's a curveball for both of you. I don't know if you look at a company called SabVest. It's not one that we often discuss on the show, but the question is, what about something from the panel on SabVest? Small cap liquidity, I know, but they continue to provide excellent results and are great allocators of capital. One for the bottom draw, ? Came out with a trading update today, which is very good. And the increase in the NAV that they're predicting is big and also way in excess of where the shares trade at the moment. So I don't know if that's just a gimme. Ashraf, is this one that you look at all?
So it's not one that I followed in, almost a decade. The team is still unchanged for the last 27 years. You still have the chairman who's been there for over 27 years. And they are great allocators of capital. They play in the private equity space, predominantly industrial. I happen to know about it because there are third parties I deal with who have co-invested with them. The comments and the feedback I get is great allocators of capital. Unfortunately, because of the lack of liquidity, for them to make up, the differential in NAV is going to take a significant value unlock event and a lot of cash coming onto the balance sheet. And they don't have that at the moment.
Yeah. Interesting. They've been in there for the last 27 years and are great allocators of capital in inverse proportion to maybe the government, which has been in power similarly over such a tenure and seems to be a woeful allocator of capital. Mark, do you look at this one?
Not in detail, but I mean, I think it's kind of well known that it is underappreciated. The problem is really with when you get to the smaller cap funds is there's not a lot of trust that can actually own them because of the risk of, you buy a small cap and something goes wrong, you can't actually exit your position.
Yeah.
And then what tends to happen is you start getting involved in management decisions, and that's what we'd not want to be as a portfolio manager. So I think it is one that probably is cheap. I mean, good management, and, maybe if you can get a bit of support on Reddit, you can probably see nice return from your investment.
Yeah. In fact, my colleague Mark Hassenfuss follows this, and he wrote quite a nice piece for the FM a few months ago looking at Remgro and SabVest, and the difference between SabVest and Remgro being that SabVest has the bulk of its net asset value in unlisted investments, which is kind of what you want from an investment holding company, because otherwise you could replicate that through a listed vehicle like a Remgro. But the only problem is they've got to probably give better disclosure on the assets that they're invested in and maybe don't always want to do so. So it's a bit of a bind that they find themselves in. But to the viewer, perhaps have a look at Mark Carson's column. It was quite a good and informative one. And then another curveball on a small cap share, but I might as well get the small caps out of the way, and it's Westcoal. Ashraf, is Westcoal a share worth holding?
So I like I like coal shares at the moment because I think that the green energy story got people got carried away with it. The reality is we are going to be stuck with dirty energy, if you want to refer to it as that, in coal and oil for at least the next decade. And so as I see it, there'll be a constant demand for coal. In fact, in India, there is currently a shortage of coal in certain states. And that's going to help keep the coal price elevated. In fact, in South Africa, we happen to score a lot of own goals because Richards Bay Coal Terminal just can't seem to get its act together. So exports are fairly slow leaving this country right now.
Yeah, Richards Bay and also Transnet and actually trucking, I mean not trucking, getting the coal to the ports to get it shipped offshore. Mark, would you look at a West Coal? Is that too small for you? Or would you rather look at a Thungela? Or would you rather than look at Glencore, you know, which maybe you don't have sort of single commodity risk. You've got other aspects to that portfolio, and Glencore has a huge seaborne coal trading business.
We have been overweight Glencore for a while now, and I think that what we like about this story is that they, instead of taking the approach of Anglo's and just distributing the coal assets, it was easy for Anglo's to make that decision because it was a small part of their EBITDA. So they could say, okay, well, if our shareholders are worried about it, we'll just distribute them to our shareholders. They can do what they want with the shares. For Glencore, it was a much bigger part of their business. And I think that they've had a more longer-term approach to say that, yes, you know, we agree and with the need to push the ESG agenda and to reduce emissions, but we're going to do it in a more controlled and a more longer-term way that doesn't destroy value in the short term. And in fact, Glencore's benefited handsomely from that decision. So there's a lot of upside in the stocks that have kept their coal assets because, like we've been discussing, the coal prices have really run hard with the whole kind of energy shortage around the world. It's, you know, there's a lot of factors. You know, I've read that the wind didn't blow as it was predicted to blow in Europe, and you know, so you had the shortage from there, plus, you know, China wanted less pollution, so they pulled back on their coal-fired plants, et cetera, which pushed the coal prices. The one thing I'd say on West Coal is just to check whether they are able to export their coal, because we have the situation in South Africa now where because we can't rail enough coal out of the terminals, we actually have a bit of an oversupply in the domestic market. And so if you can't get your coal out, realize the nice prices that that China's willing to pay.
Gents, we've been talking about some of the small caps on the JSE. So let us talk about the bigger cap companies. And the question is, firstly, please ask the panel to comment on REITs for 2022, so the property companies, and British American Tobacco. And I feel I should start with British American Tobacco because we'll go from small cap to big cap. And it's had a bit of a rally of late after a long time in the doldrums. Ashraf, what's behind its sudden spurt?
Well, I'd say is the valuation, it's always been you know, attractively valued. We looked at it last year and wanted to buy into it and eventually did take a bite at the cherry. It's a business where the cash flows remain strong. Yes, in South Africa, we are a society that's fairly anti-smoking when you compare us to the rest of the world. And if you just look at demand in Eastern Europe, you look at demand in Asia, still fairly strong, and the cash flows remain very supportive. So to me, it was no surprise when it ultimately did run.
Yeah. Mark, we were saying during the break, maybe there was a bit of relief because you picked British American Tobacco quite a lot on the show and it just went nowhere, not just for you, for everyone else, but then had this this lovely little kicker. Would you hold onto the share? Would you still buy it at this point?
Yeah, I mean, despite the, you know, the recent share price appreciation, I think you can still own BTI. I think part of what's driving the move at the moment is the rotation out of the US tech stocks into other assets. As rates go up, there is a worry that, you know, the the high valuation multiples, you know, won't last and perhaps we'll go back to more longer term multiples. And so the capital was looking for a kind of a more value type of investment. And that's why you're seeing stocks like Anheuser and BTI having a rally now. But I mean, their cash flows are good. I think their products have the opportunity to surprise to the upside. There is risk, but I mean, the risks are well known. I mean, a mental ban will, or is probably likely and will set back sales, but, you know, people who want to smoke will find alternative products and, you know, with the next generation products, they can offer them.
Yeah, yeah, they'll find a way. And then what about REITs in 2022? Ashraf, property being fairly close to your heart, the South African property index had a phenomenal run last year, and I suppose to some extent that was a recovery run. But I wonder if now the actual hard grind for the share prices is with us, because, you know, the companies have, you know, they've been through the COVID valley of darkness and done what they have to do, and now you're sort of reliant on an economy picking up, and I feel like this is going to be the tough year for REITs.
This is going to be a really tough year for REITs, and my concern is that you've had a lot of your industrial heavy REITs running over the past 18 months. So I think they have, they have limited upside. If you're exposed to South African offices, you'll continue to take pain. Somebody sent me a picture the other day. 125% of your first year's rental free.
I know exactly which property you're talking about. I drive past it often on Jan Smuts Avenue. Shall we mention the company's name or not?
No, let's just not do any promotion work. But I am concerned about those with significant property exposure. We've just got to see if it's priced in. I, for one, like high prop. I think it still has upside. And there's still value within those companies with the retail exposure. Fortress is another of my favorites.
Okay.
And, then I think there will be some value plays. Dapula, unfortunately, has had a good run. And I think may still have a bit more upside to it, but I think that upside is going to be capped, especially given the restructure between the A and B shares. So the Bs are going to be capped. Yeah. There'll still be some upside to the As.
Okay. Mark, how about you? Are there any REITs that you like?
I agree that the property sector had a very strong year last year, and I think that the returns this year will not nearly as good. I think the one that I like is Nepi Rockcastle. I also think that, you know, the stocks that have more offshore property exposure are probably better placed than the ones that have South African exposure. I mean, obviously, you have to take valuation into account, so I would add Nepi to the list.
I mean, what do you make of the extraordinary moves in shares like Robosis? That started the year off on a bang. Is this just kind of wild speculation? What's going on there? Have either of you been following that?
I have to some extent, and I think it's really on the back of speculation that there's going to be a restructure of the business, but that is just pure speculation at this point. Pitfall Yoon had it as one of his picks in a competition run by Shapiro. So let's see how that plays out over the year.
Okay. I don't want to belabor the property theme too much. Yeah. Sorry, Ashraf, to interrupt you there. Just maybe one last question. Would either of you be looking at any of the new listings? So there's, a fine, the petrol station REIT that listed in December. There's also A-REIT, which whose prospectus was widely panned by certain market punters, saying you've only got three properties, you valued it at close to R1 billion, and you only made 36 million rand from these things, which puts you in a very low yield. Or Growthpoint actually is going to be spinning out and I think listing some sort of a healthcare portfolio, as I understand it. I don't know. Would do any of those tempt you into them, Mark and Ashraf? Mark?
Not really, Juliet.
Oh, Ashraf.
I think the spin-off would be a great investment. Healthcare will remain a focus in South Africa. People who can afford it will happily pay for it. But any of the others, I'm a bit hesitant. In fact, I'd rather go and buy a Capital & Counties or a Hammerson before I buy a Growthpoint.
Okay. Mark, just a last comment from you there. Will you keep an eye on the new listings, at least?
Yeah, I mean, we'll look at them, but we need larger companies. We need decent balance sheets. We need to understand who management are. So it's not new property listings, not something that we would really chase.
Okay. And then there's a curious question. So this person is sort of asking well in advance, and they say that December will be the ANC's elective conference. Do you think we'll experience the Ramaphosa atmosphere, or the elective conference won't have any impact on SA equities? I'm saving cash in case we get surprises during the elective conference. I'm not sure if there's anything euphoric about attached to Cyril Ramaphosa at the moment, him being the incumbent and all, and not really doing what we all, I think, hoped he would. But the question, would you sit on cash in expectation of some sort of markets rally around this? Is that a wise move?
I think what's priced into the market at the moment is a continuation of Ramaphosa as head of the ANC. So if we start seeing a credible kind of challenge to that position, then potentially we'll see domestic, like particularly the banks, will be the ones that share prices will start pricing in risk if there's any kind of credible challenge to Ramaphosa. I mean, that's not the base case at the moment by any means. I wouldn't really put cash on the sidelines in hope of a buying opportunity ahead of the elective conference. I mean, if we are getting to a stage where the market's selling off because of worries over the elective conference, it's going to be something that's very difficult to call. So
yeah,
I wouldn't mean that.
Ashraf, your thoughts, I don't know, on the politics, or just would you keep cash aside maybe in expectation of a bit of a market pullback? Just generally,
you know,
not South Africa specific.
So let me start South Africa specifically, because South Africa has diverged from the rest of the world in terms of market performance. And, you know, I agree with Mark, the banks are cheap and you can buy them now, and you'll be buying something like a Standard Bank on a forward yield of 8%. Remember last year, they couldn't really pay dividends. Their balance sheets remain strong. Earnings growth will be good. And they will be able to release some of the reserves that have been created. So I think we're going to see strong dividend flows for this year coming from the banks. And I also think you need to look at our retailers, because South Africans will continue spending money on different types of products. Yes, you know, people have said households are extended, unemployment is high, but I think the retailers have priced in all those concerns, and I think you'll see a recovery in the retail sector.
Okay, well, let's hope so. Okay, gents, getting to your stock picks this evening. Mark, if I may start with you.
Yes, so I'm picking Mediclinic tonight. So, I mean, it's a nice diversified hospitals business, and I think that as we see the normalization after COVID, we will start seeing a lot of elective surgeries picking up again. People have been delaying going to hospitals as long as they can for the last 2 years. So there's a lot of pent-up demand in that space, and that's high margin business for the hospital groups. With Mediclinic, you also get a geographic diversification. So you've got the South African business, the business in Switzerland, the business in the UAE. And we do expect kind of a weakening bias to the rand in the medium term. Perhaps not in the shorter term, but it's certainly in the medium term. And if you add all that together, I think on our numbers we get to a 14% per annum return from your investments in Medicare.
Okay, not too shabby. Ashraf, how about you?
So my stock pick is Meta, previously known as Facebook. It's on a forward PE of just under 20 times. They're doing $10 billion in buybacks. They're investing over $20 billion in the metaverse over the next 3 years. And I see this as a company that has been punished for its numerous sins, but I expect a recovery. Zero debt on the balance sheet.
Yeah. Okay, there's Ashraf Mohammed moving on to the dark side. Fair enough, however, we're all capitalists here. I'm Ashraf, Mark, thanks very much for your time this evening. Nice to see you both. Ashraf Mohammed is an independent analyst, and Mark Du Toit from Oystercatcher Investments, and Bryce will take all of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening.